We're there, we're ready. We're running.
You sure? We're running.
Red light. Green light.
Green light, let's go. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Drive Talk podcast powered by Michelin. You're all right, my mate?
I'm very good. Thanks, mate. I'm very good.
Excellent. So, I guess first up, where are we today? Well, if you tuned into the last episode with our good friend Becky Evans, we are still in the same venue. The only difference is I've had two pints because we had a really nice lunch.
Yes, and Becky's not here anymore.
This is true. So we're at the Farncombe Estate near Broadway in the Cotswolds at a good friend of mine's hotel. And we are at the Fish. Now, the Fish Hotel is a mega hotel. You've stayed here a couple of times.
Yeah, before I sort of even knew that you sort of come here regularly as well.
And I might have sent you a bottle of champagne across the bar.
You did, actually. Yes, that's right. Yeah, I got to the bar with Lou. It was actually one of our first away dates.
Yeah.
It would have been 4 or 5 years ago. And we got to the bar and they were like, oh, Petrol Ped's brought you a drink. And I'm like, well, where is he? And you'd, I don't know.
You put an Instagram story. I'd seen a story, sent it to my man Andrew and went, Joe's stay, can I buy him a drink? And yeah. I bought you a drink.
Yes.
But we're in one of their hillside hangouts, which are really cool kind of party house that you can hire the whole house. They've got a number of them ranging in different sizes, but this place is so cool. We're in the lounge area at the moment. Downstairs is the most fantastic kitchen, lovely bedrooms. Have you seen the hot tub outside?
I have, yeah.
Maybe be avoiding that one. So yeah, so massive thank you to the Farncombe Estate for hosting us.
Yeah.
Because it was a nice, convenient place to get Becky and the three of us together. So yeah.
Dog friendly and
very
really amazing walks and stuff. It's a fantastic place. Yeah. In fact, coming back here, I'm like, I need to book a night here with Lou.
You need to bring Peggy dog.
Need to bring the pegs. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so in the last one, my dog Darcy was sat between us. She's still here. She's actually sat fast asleep on a sofa over there, bless her. I think she's a bit tired with all the stardom and the fame.
Yes.
So this one, we've got lots to catch up on. I haven't seen Joe for a few weeks when we've been up to some really exciting things. And there's a bit of a Japanese JDM theme going through this episode, which is really exciting for both of us because we're both experts in JDM, aren't we?
We are. You say that with sarcasm, but actually you should be an expert because you just spent a week in Japan, whereas I've got an excuse.
This is true. So one of the things that's proved quite popular in podcasts of late is our kind of car challenges, where we challenge ourselves with a certain budget to find cool cars. And we're going to do another one of those in the second half of this podcast, but very JDM themed. And Joe's really looking forward to that one. Right?
Yeah, wish us luck.
So first up, bit of a catch up. What have we been up to? So I want to start off with you, because you were very recently out at the MotoGP.
I was, yeah, really fortunate enough to get invited out to Portimão in Portugal. Portimão circuit is what they refer to as the roller coaster, because it is very much like the roller coaster. And in fact, they held an F1 race there during COVID years, I think. Ooh. 2020 and maybe even 2021.
Amazing circuit.
Oh, just beautiful. You're either looking down at tarmac or you're looking up at the sky. But yeah, went out there with BMW M and had the best few days out there with my good friend Andy. It was just brilliant. I love that place as a holiday destination down at the bottom of Portugal there near Lagos, in English. But yeah, it was just great. This, as you know, I love MotoGP, watching the bikes, watching everything, talking to the Michelin guys. I bumped into Piero.
So amazing.
He's always a lovely, friendly face to see. He always comes up and gives me some time, even though you can see that he's about to head off to a meeting.
He's probably so busy.
Yeah.
So again, if you've been watching the podcast from the start, you remember we had Piero on when we did MotoGP special at Silverstone last year, head of two-wheel motorsport at Michelin, I think his title is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
What a cool guy.
Lovely.
What stories.
Yeah, and it was just great seeing all that, appreciating everything with the sport, and the racing was good to top it all off. I also did a bit of a drifting event there with a couple of the riders. So BMW M had set up, like, they'd basically taken over a car park on the outside of the circuit, and got two of the riders to take part, and myself, and they had the Red Bull Drift Brothers there, or half of them. Elias, who's one of the brothers, and I was just wicked. It was just, it was fun. It was, yeah, it was awesome.
And he had that little electric bike going around. That looked really good fun.
Yes. Yeah, we're on a...
I love the shots of you on the circuit, getting your knee down.
Yeah, we're on a BMW CE02, it's called. So it's their new compact electric scooter. Pretty pricey. It's about 10,000 euros. Yeah, very pricey. I can imagine most of that is battery technology.
I remember when like a Ducati 918 was like 10,000 euros.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a normal scooter, to be fair, these days is, I think, about 3.5-4 grand for a good one. This is 10 grand. But it was loads of fun. And yeah, we went out on the circuit on the Saturday night. Apparently, we had permission to go out there and take some photos and do a lap. But we found out after about 20 minutes that we apparently didn't have permission because we got escorted off the circuit. But we managed to get some pictures and some footage before that, so it was good. And that scooter was on Michelin, I don't know which tyres, but it was on Michelin tyres, like smaller scooter tyres. So I had trust in the grip.
Excellent. Yeah. Hey, now, interesting thing that's broken news. Well, now I'm thinking when this one's going out, a couple of weeks ago now, is the acquisition of MotoGP by Liberty Media, the guys who own F1.
Yep.
What's your thoughts on that?
Well, it was talk of the paddock when I was there, because I now know a lot of people in the paddock, which is great. And I didn't know before that weekend that anything like that was happening. Dorna have been around for ages, a long time, all the time I've been watching MotoGP. And I just assumed it was all right. But then I started hearing that it was basically a done deal a couple of weeks ago. And then obviously it broke in the news a few days ago. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I think it's going to be, there's going to be positives and negatives around it. I think a lot of what Dorna do is a bit old fashioned. And I think they appeal, like most motorbike sports or superbikes, MotoGP, the audience tends to be a lot older. Bikers seem to be older, and that's great. And, you know, these people actually go out and buy bikes, but they need to appeal a bit more to the younger audience. All the riders are really young. What they do is really cool. And when youngsters see what they do, it's like, wow. But they're just not appealing for whatever reason to that younger audience. You don't see many young people there at the races. So I think Liberty are going to hopefully improve that, improve the numbers like they've done with Formula One. But I just hope they don't, and I don't want this to sound offensive, I hope they don't Americanize it too much and make it too bling like F1 has gone, because I think F1 can go that way because it's money and you kind of expect it. But I think MotoGP, it's more grassroots than F1 will ever be. So but yeah, I don't know, I'm optimistic about it. I hope it brings some good changes, I hope I can continue to go to some races down the track. That's the most important thing, obviously, selfishly, is that we get to do more podcasts there. I really hope that we can go to MotoGP.
I'd love to. I'd really love to. And I'm hopefully that the minimum will get to Silverstone this year.
Yeah.
And I know last year I could have gone to the race, but I had something on that weekend.
Yes.
Story of my life.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. You know a lot more about MotoGP. My only hopes for the Liberty deal is that it has money. What they have done really well with Formula One is engage with social media and, like you said, with a new audience.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see if the next thing they announce is a kind of drive to survive, maybe a ride to survive equivalent for Netflix, because look what that's done for Formula One.
Yep.
I don't think it's improved the racing so much, but it's improved the crowd turnout and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
so.
And it's also open, a bit like Top Gear did many years ago with the Clarkson. And you didn't necessarily have to be a car boy or girl to watch Top Gear, because there was a storyline. It was always something interesting. You'd visit amazing countries and see beautiful scenery. So it wasn't just you had to watch, you know, you had to be into cars to watch Top Gear. I think that's kind of what F1 with, especially with a Drive to Survive, like the amount of friends I've got that are like, oh wow, I've watched F1 for the first time on Drive to Survive, because it's an interesting storyline.
And the hero of the whole thing is one of the team principals, Gunther Steiner. I mean, he's a legend, and he's not a team principal anymore, but
no. Oh, imagine we need back. To get Gunther on here one day. That'd be amazing.
Maybe we need to set ourselves a target of doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the and again, the bit I find really interesting about your MotoGP stuff is you cover that on your Instagram feed. So if you're not following Joe on Instagram, the way you do your stories and stuff is so much less lifestyle than me. And
I've got a lot of learning to do, haven't I?
Oh, dear. Yeah, but no, on a serious note, it's great because I felt you'd wake up in the morning, you'd look at your stories, and you'd almost get that transportation as if you were there. And yep. I think that's for us as creators, we do the YouTube side of things, but Instagram is such a different platform, and the way you use it, I find fascinating and try and learn from.
I think it's just because I think with that sport in particular, I'm so obsessed with it that I automatically assume that everyone else is that watches my Instagram feed, which 99% probably aren't, but I do like to try and share all the details and the feelings I've got there and then, because it's just like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I still feel like a kid in a sweet shop.
But it's funny, because you'd call yourself maybe a YouTuber, but you won't make a video about that on YouTube.
No, I think it's hard with all the motorsports. I know we're going to get on to talking about your yeah. travels recently, but I think I find that very hard and disheartening sometimes, because anything motorsporty that I've produced video-wise, it just tanks. Yeah. Like, I was at the Mint 400 race in Vegas, as we talked about a couple of pods ago, and I filmed something there, but I know it's just not going to... It will get less views than one Instagram story. So it's like the effort you put in, and some like it's also been an event that's been and gone. So if you're into MotoGP, you know what the results are. You know, you've been there. You're not necessarily wanting to revisit. That's what's good about stories, I think, is it's kind of live, isn't it? So yeah, but there are. So I did film a video on the drifting element of it. So So that'll be coming soon. But yeah, great event. Love it. Off to Mugello with Michelin in no time. What is it? Probably about a month's time when this goes out, which I can't wait, because Mugello is, I've never been before. It is meant to be the mecca of MotoGP. All the crazy Italian fans. And it's just meant to be amazing. And it's the sort of place you can't normally get tickets for years in advance. You can't get accommodation. You can't get to going. Being invited as a guest of Michelin will be brilliant, because it means I can just turn up and enjoy and get those stories going.
And you get some nice lanyards for your collection.
Yes, mate. Yeah, yeah. I might see if I can sniff you out a spare one. Yeah.
I've got no more space. I need a wider window now. I've literally filled it up. I put my lanyards away from my trip last week. Yeah. Like, damn, I've run out of space already.
Yeah, you are the king of lanyards. I remember when I first came to your house and I went into that was your spare bedroom, wasn't it? Your office. And I went in there and I was just like, oh, wow, I thought I had a lot of lanyards. My goodness.
I've kept them all for the last 8 years. Some rubbish ones, but some good ones.
Yeah.
Well, next topic. Well, if you're going to the MotoGP.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
I'm going to fire you up now.
Yes.
Because I've been to the Formula E. I know you just need to calm down.
Yeah.
Because I know you'll be very excited about it.
Yes. Now, listen, I think firstly, you weren't just in the Formula E. You're in one of the most interesting countries in the world. You went out to Japan for basically a week.
Yeah.
So I think, I look forward to hearing about it, because we tried not to talk too much about it off camera.
Yeah.
Because that's always a hard thing with podcasts, isn't
it? I know. Yeah. You meet up in the morning and you tell all the stories before the cameras are rolling.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been to Japan before, right?
Yes.
What a place.
It's just like nowhere else, really.
You know, when you, for me, I've always wanted to go there, and I had this expectation of what it might be like.
Yep.
And I was really worried that it would be a letdown, that it wouldn't match those expectations. And if anything, it was even better than I expected it to be. It's just such a cool place. And the frustrating thing was, we were in Tokyo for a week, so I only really saw the city. I'd love to go out into the countryside and see, you know, much more of the kind of the culture and the kind of more rural way of life and all of that kind of stuff. I was in the big bustling city of Tokyo, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It's so clean. It's so ordered. And the Japanese people are so lovely. The food's great, but their car culture is just off the charts.
Yeah. So tell us aside from the Formula E, and we will obviously get to that soon. You did a lot. You went out there with Nissan.
I was out there with Nissan, and I'm working this year with Nissan to kind of help promote or disseminate more information about Formula E. So that was our primary focus. But they're in Formula E as part of their like electrification journey. Like all manufacturers, they've been kind of funneled down this road of electrification, whether we like it or not, whether we think it's the right thing to do or not. They have no choice, really.
Yeah.
So they've got an electrification journey, and Formula E is a very important part of that. But they've also got immense heritage in terms of cool performance cars, normal family cars, and it was really a deep dive into that world and a whole bunch of stuff around just being in Japan, great food, culture, and all that kind of stuff. So they laid on a program. It was a pretty full-on week. But for someone who'd never been to Japan before, it kind of ticked off lots of boxes, but was also, it was a real frustrating week in a way, because each one of the things we did, we could have done for like a day instead of a couple of hours, you know?
Yeah.
We went to the Heritage Collection, which is, I think all manufacturers have them, BMW, Porsche, whoever, you'll find they've got a Heritage Collection. Their Nissan's one is in Tokyo. They have just short of 300 cars on display. I think in total they've got 550 cars, because they've got some that they don't have on display but are in storage in other parts of Tokyo.
Yeah.
Right from the very first car that they've got, all the most iconic road cars that they've ever done, racing cars through every racing discipline you can think of. So we had a good walk around that with a guy who was, he'd worked for Toyota since 1968.
Wow.
And he was the head of motorsport for most of that time. And he was really, really a very cool...
68, you would have been, what, uni back then?
Yeah, very funny. I was not born. It's 3 years before I was born. Oh, 4 years before I was born. So we did that. We did the Nismo factory, which was really cool. I think most people, a lot of you have heard of Nismo, but that's, they were a separate company. I didn't realize they were acquired by Nissan a while ago now. So they're part of Nissan, but they're okay. The kind of tuning and motorsports wing. So all Nissan motorsport runs under Nismo, but you can take your car there and they'll do modifications and tuning. And
so like BMW M, I suppose.
Exactly the same,
yeah.
Much. Yep. BMW M,
yep.
Audi RS, that yep. kind of thing. And that was really cool, because you walk in that place and they've got the workshop with all the kind of customer cars, and there's just Skylines and GTRs and all of these Fast and Furious style cars. It's just like amazing place.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, and then we went to Daikoku, which is the big... like a big car park under a load of overpasses, but it's it's like a Fast and Furious famous kind of location. But I'm going to have to admit now, I've never watched a Fast and Furious film.
Neither have I. I can't watch. So once I get to 15th gear and they're going in a straight line, I'm like, I just can't, as a car person, I can't watch that.
So all these guys, they're all raving about Fast and Furious. I haven't actually watched one. And Tokyo Drift, which I think is the third one, I think.
Yeah.
So they're all like, oh yeah, Tokyo Drift. I'm like, I don't know. On the day we got there, the German guy who got really friendly with Mario Roman, he said, oh, we're going to go to Shibuya Crossing. I'm like, where?
Yeah.
Tokyo Drift.
Yes.
But it was really cool. So yeah, really, really, Japan car culture is, and that's what I thought we'd do, the whole JDM thing at the end of this episode, because I saw lots of very cool cars and I thought, actually, I quite like those.
Yes. They look great on your Instagram stories and some of your reels when I was looking past the lifestyle stuff.
Such a
group. Yeah. If you've not, honestly, I mean, I'm sure most of you do, and I hope you do, but no. Just look
back. My Instagram following is rubbish.
Look back on some of Ped's reels in Japan and let us know what you think of them. I mean, I think they're some of them are pretty interesting. You've certainly been brushing up on your poses. I particularly like that one where the camera just arrives and it's almost like you're like there. And you're
very
like,
I was smouldering.
There's a camera. I'll just look into the distance and then it just swings around. I was impressed with it, mate. I was very impressed with it.
That's what you get when you go on. So the really interesting, there's a group of nearly 20 people from all over the world. I was the only UK guy there, but there was motoring journalists and YouTubers and Instagrammers and fashion vloggers and podcasters and a whole range of, it's a bit like the trip I did with Finland, to Finland with Nissan as well.
Yeah.
So there were quite a lot of lifestyle creators. So you can't help but kind of watch what they're doing and it kind of rubs off on
you. Of course. No, I genuinely thought it was fascinating and interesting. No, I did. I enjoyed it. I was entertained by it, which is a good thing. But tell us about the Formula E. Come on.
Sell
it to me.
I'm going to try and sell it. So... I'm going to preface this by saying, and I honestly don't know the reasons behind this decision, but it baffles me completely. Formula E as a sport, I think any of us that are motorsport fans or petrol heads will maybe look at Formula E. It's 10 years it's been going now.
Wow. Okay.
It's a long time.
Yep.
It's evolved a lot in those days. In the first generation of cars, they used to stop halfway and swap cars.
That's
if you remember
right.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not, you know, I wouldn't say they're struggling for TV audience, but they want to grow their TV audience. So if you want to grow your TV audience, what do? You put live Formula E coverage behind a paywall.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense, does it? It
doesn't make any sense to me at all.
No.
And, you know, even Formula One, yeah, I pay for Sky Sports predominantly for Formula One, but even that, you get a few races on live coverage on ITV.
Terrestrial, so. Yeah.
So Nissan wanted to kind of engage with creators like myself to try and get a bit more information out there about Formula E. And I honestly think it is a misunderstood race series because people go, they don't make any noise, they're electric cars, it's just like a, you know, electric milk float race. But actually, the more I found out about it, the more I realised that it's very different to Formula One, but the drivers are, the workload on the drivers, I mean, we've met lots of racing car drivers and their bandwidth to be able to cope with extra stuff outside of just driving the car fast is amazing anyway, right? You watch... Yep. In car of Lewis Hamilton or Max Verstappen, you know, making changes to brake bias and stuff on the laps when they're doing, you know, 150 miles an hour. It's amazing.
Yeah.
In Formula E, there's no telemetry at all. So all of the information about the car and its performance, so battery temps and all of the settings on the car, the only way that gets back to the pits is verbally from the driver over the radio to the engineer in the pits. But because the radio channels are open, they can't just say, oh, my battery's at this temperature or my regen's at this. They have to then encode it so no one else can understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
Then that information goes to the pit crew and they've got a team of data engineers and analysis in the pits who make decisions about strategy and car settings and stuff. And then feed it back to the driver in code. Right. And then the driver makes changes on the steering wheel. While he's driving around a street circuit, upwards of a Formula E car will do 320 kilometers an hour in a straight line. Yeah, yeah, yeah. If the straights were long enough, 320 kilometers.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
So they're about 850 kilos, about 470 horsepower.
Okay.
So they're really fast.
Yeah.
So when you start to look at the workload on the driver, I think it's interesting. And then you look at the racing itself, yes, it doesn't make a noise. Yes, the cars aren't as dynamic as Formula One. Anyone would admit that, but
they do make noise when they crash.
They do, and you can hear the yeah. of the tires squealing yeah. and stuff. But the racing's really tight. You know, you look at the top 10 cars, there's probably less than 5 or 6 seconds between them for the whole race.
Yep.
And lots of overtaking and stuff. So I am, don't get me wrong, I'll tune into Formula One every week and I'll enjoy it. Formula E, I'm learning, and the more I learn, the more I like it.
Yeah, and appreciate it.
And then on the way back, I was on the same flight. So we were out there with Nissan. Nissan got pole position with Oliver Rowland from the UK, British driver. And then he ended up coming second in the race. He led the race for most of the race. But what killed him, because I flew back on the same plane. So we had a chat on the way home. And he was in the lead. And it's a bit like when we were doing, you know, go back to our cycling days, when you're drafting someone on a bike.
Yep.
You're behind a bike or a car, you get this massive aerodynamic advantage. And because he was in the front of the race, he had all the drag of the aerodynamics, and that meant he used more energy. So he just knew that if he'd stayed there, even though he was in front, even though he had track position, he wouldn't have lasted the race because he wouldn't have had enough battery.
Oh, right. Okay.
So he had no choice but to literally, at one point, you see him pull to one side and the second driver takes over.
Yep.
So he had to let the second driver through just for battery preservation, which you might argue is a bit of a false thing. And then he thought, well, what I'll do is I'll then sit behind him for 5 or 6 laps, recoup some energy, and then do him on the last lap. And unfortunately, he couldn't quite do him on the last lap.
Okay.
But it was good. I'm becoming a bit more of a fan.
Yeah, so, I mean, it sounds... Yeah, I've always... Because I actually... You said it's 10 years old, and that makes sense, because I 10 years ago, I was still whacking... I was just about to leave Storm. No, I was working in ASOS, but I lived in Battersea, Battersea Park Road or whatever, looking over the park.
Oh, and the first race there, didn't they?
Yeah, so they had, I think the first race there was in 2014 or 13, whatever. But I didn't know about it until the weekend of the race, because they just kept it so private back then, because it's never really been a spectator's, well, at least it didn't used to be. Oh. And so I had to do homework to find out what it was all about. And like you said, the first gen cars were a bit comical with the whole change in the car and the pit stops because of the battery life and stuff. But I did go to a few over the years, and I did have fun, mostly because there was a lot of alcohol around, and they were great venues. They tend to be, what was that?
Alcohol?
Yeah, exactly. But they were great venues that I went to, and And the racing was really good. When you strip it back, the racing was really good. I think like anything, again, going back to when I was at the MotoGP, they have, I think, 4 or 5 rounds of Moto E in a year. And the opening round was at Portimao, which was round 2 of the combustion engine bikes. And it was just, the racing was really good. On the TV, actually, it was quite fun to watch. But then you'd go to the grandstand or whatever, and it was just like, it was just really...
It's a tough sell. I mean, there's the other bits about, there's a mega sustainability message around it. So the cars, all the cars are exactly the same. But if you look at, if you like, from the driver backwards, so the battery, motor, all the software, that's proprietary to each manufacturer.
Yep.
So a Nissan provide the battery and motor to McLaren.
Oh, okay. Do they stitch them up?
Yeah, probably. But they're very much a strategy about race to road. So there's a lot of trickle down technology into their road car development.
Yep.
But they only have 7 tons of freight allowance per team, and the cars go directly from each race to each race. So they never come back to the UK.
Yep.
And they only have what was quite funny. Bearing in mind we're sponsored by Michelin, so the Gen 2 cars had Michelin tires.
Yes. Yeah. Gen 1 and 2.
Gen 3. Cars are running Hankooks.
Yep.
And everyone prefers the Michelins, basically.
Yes.
But they only have 2 sets of tyres per car for the whole weekend.
Yeah. Which I think is really cool.
Which is really cool. And they look like a road tyre. They've got tread pattern and everything. And they can run in the wet, they can run in the dry.
Yep.
So
it's how you manage that tyre wear throughout the weekend.
Yeah.
Because if you destroy them in practice and qualifying, you're going to end up with a slow race car, but vice versa. Yeah. And so, I think that's why everything turns. One week it would be, what's your man, Oliver?
Oliver Rowland, yeah.
Yeah, he might win or come on the podium, but then the next race he might be like 15th. And I think the level of drivers there are really good as well, because there is, they all get paid a bit.
They get paid a lot of money.
Yeah, a good wage. So therefore they attract really high-end, top-quality drivers that maybe haven't made it into F1 for political reasons or whatever reason.
Yeah.
So actually you get just as much talent in something like the Formula E.
Yeah. Although interestingly, one of the guys was saying, so Giovinazzi, who was driving for Alfa Romeo in F1, he came into Formula E, just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
He could drive the car fast, but he couldn't do all the other things.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So it was really interesting.
Awesome.
Really, really interesting.
Nice.
So while we're on about bikes, you've done a track day on a bike.
Yeah.
And a track day in your M2.
Yes. Yes.
Your M2's running again.
My M2's running again. We'll do it in order because it was actually, within 4 days I did a bike track day and a car track day.
Power Ranger,
yeah. What shoes? Oh, you're taking your racing boots off.
I've got proper shoes on this time. Yeah. I'm surprised you're not in your romper suit.
Well, I've actually got some driving shoes on, my Pilates.
Pilates.
But you wouldn't notice because they just look fairly subtle. And
I did too.
Dog dick red.
I didn't call them dog dick
red. I can't remember who did. But anyway.
They were Puma Speed Cats, mate. They were
very cool. Yeah. Very cool.
Anyway, Power Ranger.
Yeah, going back to being a Power Ranger. So motorbike track day, you might not know, but 18, 20 months ago, I've got my bike license. Something I've wanted for my entire life, but Dad, gratefully now, looking back on it, didn't allow me to. I think we've had this conversation.
That's strange. My dad didn't either.
Yeah. And for the right reason, because I think, I know I would probably be maybe in a worse state than I am today if I did have one. But now I respect him a lot more. But the aim for me was always get a bike license and then do some track days, because I love track day stuff in the car. And I just can't wait to try it on the bike and try and replicate 2% of what the MotoGP guys do. So BMW Motorrad UK very nicely invited me down to, they're calling it, I think, the Performance Academy. It's based out of Mallory Park, which I'd never been to before. It's a great little circuit. And when I say little, it is little.
It's like, short, isn't it?
Yeah, less than a minute a lap for fast bikes or cars. But really undulated and very cool, narrow, quite technical. Bit like Goodwood and Nürburgring and Brands Hatch all together, you know, very... Anyway, this academy's run by BMW, but all the riders or the instructors are either current pro, like British Superbike riders or Super Sport riders, or ex-like champions and stuff. So you've got some real talent there. And I had Taylor McKenzie, son of Niall McKenzie, as my instructor. I spoke to him on socials for years, and we've always talked about doing a video and never got around to it. So it was like first time meeting him. And then, had him. It was like a four group. We started in a four group, and then throughout the day, we kind of narrowed it down. By the end of the day, it was like one to one. But unfortunately, the weather, as we all know, this year so far has just been tragic. And I've never seen so much rain and hail. I mean, I literally...
Which is really what you want on a motorbike track.
On basically just about road legal slicks on a 210 horsepower S1000RR.
210 horsepower.
Weighs 193 kilos.
Oh, mate.
And it has 200. So that's more than... What's the Koenigsegg one-to-one?
That's 1,000 of 1,000.
Yeah, so this is more than... This is, 210 horsepower, wow. 193 kilos. So you got all that power. But it got so bad that I actually thought to myself, if I was in a car now, I'd be looking for like a petrol station shelter to go under, because I'd be worried I'd die in a car. And I'm out there in my Power Ranger.
It was very cool.
It's a big shout out to RST for sending me those awesome leathers. And I was grateful to have them on. They did make me feel safe. They had an airbag in them and everything. But weather did really put a damper on things, excuse the pun. I got one dry session at the end of the day, which was amazing. I got to experience probably 130 horsepower. But just my respect for the bikes and bikers and everything went through the roof. So it was good. I need to get fitter. I need to get lighter and try again. But yeah, great experience. Very, very good. And not intimidating at all, because I was intimidated getting there.
Do you have radio contact with it?
No, so it was all they decided to go against that because it would just been overload. So you kind of get a lot of tuition talk in the classroom in between each session, and then as soon as you get off the bike, and then you're on the bike, and if they need to point out a few things, they will. But you've got so much, I think, because it was a real beginner's course, you've just got so much to focus on. I think if someone was telling you stuff as well while you're on there, it'd just be like, too much. So it was awesome. Very, very cool. Yeah, and I'm alive.
Too cool, man. And the M2's all right.
M2, oh mate, yeah. M2 is look at my big grin. Was that yesterday? 2 days ago.
Yeah.
It's amazing, because the thing with the M2, I did this big M2 build in 2022, probably about 6-7 months of build, and got to the end of 2022, and we finished the build, but it was like November or something. There was no more track days, and I decided not to drive the car until the next year on a nice dry track day. So I had this finished built car that I was super excited about. And then obviously, last May came, took it to a track day to try my finished car for the first time. And on lap three, I misshifted, as we all know about.
Did you?
Yeah.
What did you do? Top of fifth into third or something?
Top of fourth into third.
Nice. Yeah.
So essentially, I never got to really experience my car. So finally got it finished, back to Bedford, exactly where it happened. And my first few laps are quite funny, because even though we've changed the shifter, changed everything now, it's back to how it should be. And I'm literally going down that finish straight, and I'm like second, third, fourth, and then fifth, and literally saying it to, like, I had someone next to me, and they're like, Joe, you keep saying four, five. And I'm like, just need to get it right. It was awesome. It was great, and can't wait to do another one. So yeah, that was good.
I did have a track day. I was gonna take my Porsche to a track day, but I think I've got something else on now, so I can't. But
okay,
I do like a track day. But
you do, we need to do some more together. Maybe we can do a themed somehow.
I need to drive the Mini now it's all sorted.
Yes, yeah, and you need to drive the M2.
Yeah, maybe we should definitely do that.
Yes, and a podcast. How cool would a podcast be down in the Goodwood pit, in the pits there?
We've got some really cool venues for podcasts in the planning.
Yes, we have.
We have.
Yeah, and some more lives as well.
Because we haven't talked since we did the live.
We haven't, no.
We didn't even mention it on the Becky one last week. For those of you who came along to the live one we did at Berry BMW, Heathrow, it was an amazing evening.
It was.
So much fun. Great that everyone turned up. So that was our test drive.
Yep.
Our pilot, and it worked really, really well. So we'll definitely be doing that again.
Yes.
That was such fun.
It was
such fun.
Yeah, no, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And what else are you, because you, to me, I feel like, you've been really busy this year.
So far, it's been really, I mean, I have been quite busy being away and stuff. I guess the biggest frustration that my Hendy long termer, when I went from my Defender 90, I got my Astra Electric.
Yeah.
Which is actually a much better car than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But I have had, you know, I think it was two podcasts ago, we were talking about the state of the roads and punctures. And I'm pretty sure I made some comment like, you don't really need tire gunk or a spare tire anymore because you don't have a puncture that often.
You did say that.
And if you do, you just suck it up and get on with it.
Yep.
Right. So 3 days after we recorded that podcast, I had a double puncture in the Astra. Well, I didn't. Tracy was driving at the time. Both on the left-hand side of the car.
Yep.
So front left wheel deflated while she was driving. By the time she stopped, absolutely shredded. Which is what happens. If you don't stop instantly or the tire doesn't deflate when you're stationary, the sidewall's knackered within a few hundred yards, right?
Yeah.
And then got to the destination outside her work, and then the rear tire deflated as well. So we got the car recovered. It took us a while to source a tire. I let Hendy do that. They sourced two tires. After about a week, they got the tires on the car, tested everything, got it back to me about a week and a half later. So it was off the road for quite a long time. And then I managed, because it was due to go back, so I managed to film my living with review, but just the static bit around the car. And then I was going to do the driving thing a couple of days later. And then the next day, Tracy drove it to work and had another puncture.
We were there. Pat and I were. It was during the live Drive Talk live podcast. Yeah. We'd gone to the supermarket to buy some food.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
And that's when you got the dreaded phone call.
Tracy went...
I thought, I looked at your face and I was like, I think I might have even whispered to Pat. I was like, oh my God, I think there's been like death in the family or something. And Pat and I were both like, let's just give him some space. Like for once in my life, I was like, I'm not going to take the piss out of bed. I think we should give him some space. So we wandered off and I was like, oh no, what's happened? And you're like, oh, I'm so pissed off. Got another puncture. And
another
I was like,
puncture.
Oh, okay. It's only a puncture. It was a puncture and a Vauxhall. It wasn't a death family member.
No. So this time I thought, right, so it's the rear left tire.
Yep.
And again, by the time Tracer spotted it, she'd only driven just to the front gate and that, but the sidewall was knackered, tire was knackered. So the car's at home and I'm thinking, right, the easiest way for me to get this done quickly, because I need to get it done quickly, is I'll get a tire, and it was running Michelin e-primacy tires.
Yep.
So I had a chat with Michelin, I got a tire sent out to me. I had a chat with my local tyre place that does all my tyre fitting, a pro tyre in Southbourne. Big shout out, lads. Took the tyre down there, left it with them, went off and did a couple of things, came back again, sad face on the guy, and I'm like, what's wrong? He went, you need to come and have a look at this. Put the wheel on the
thing,
span it up, and it was like one of those potters. You know when someone's doing a potter's wheel and the wheel's like... And the inside was just so badly buckled. I was like, oh. I don't know how the first tyre got fitted without it being spotted. And what we think is that the car had parked up with the buckle at the bottom and the bead had just gone and then all the air had come out and then that's how it deflated because that tire had done less than 50 miles.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And this is like 2 days before I go to Japan. Oh. So the car then sits at home. Oh, then the next thing is jacking a car up. Easy job, right? So you got a trolley jack. You think, where's the jacking point on an Astra? Well, we ended up having to ring up the dealer to find out where the jacking point was. There was no scissor jack in the car.
Okay.
And it's just a nightmare. So eventually, me and my next door mate, we kind of confident enough that we thought we knew where the jacking point was to jack the car up. Jack the car off, took the wheel off. Wheel went off to get fixed. And I've literally just had a call today, actually. The tyre and the wheel are now reunited. It's debuckled.
Yep.
And it's getting delivered back tomorrow. So the car will be... drivable tomorrow, so this Excellent. Coming weekend I can do my film,
yeah,
and then on Monday it goes back and I get my next new long term.
Tracy's not going to drive it in between that, is she?
No chance.
No, okay, good. Sorry if you're listening.
So the Astra goes back, new long termer arrives.
Okay yeah, which I'm not going to spoil, but it sounds like it's a fun
car, and yeah. This will have gone out by the time I get it.
Oh,
hopefully.
Yeah,
so I'm getting a Lotus Emira.
Yeah. Awesome.
It should be quite good.
Yeah, you won't. Well, I mean, yeah. Hopefully, no punches. It would just break down.
Probably. no, you can't. Anyway, right. So, we've got about 20 minutes left.
Yes.
So, in previous podcasts, we have set ourselves a challenge to find cars online with amusing results. We've done. Oh, what have we done? We've done Cars under 10 grand. Didn't we do a cheapest car, 25, 50?
Yeah, 25, 50.
Grand, dream cars, lottery win cars, all kinds of things.
Yep, no budget cars.
Yeah. So this time, I thought I would test Joe and I's knowledge of the JDM car scene.
Don't get me wrong, I do love a JDM, and I appreciate them, but it's almost like I think I'm a very much German car guy.
Yeah.
If you had to pigeonhole me, you also, but you do very.
I've owned a few Japanese cars, but it was only when we had Becky on the last episode and we were asking about her cars, and she started stringing off all these random numbers and letters, and I'm like,
"What are you talking about?
What are you talking about, Becky?" She went, "Oh, it's a Nissan so and so, or this." Yeah. I'm like,
"It's like she's reading a parts number from the Argos catalog or something." It's like, "What are you talking about?"
It's clearly the whole drift scene is this big JDM Japanese car influence. So I decided we'd just have a bit of fun because we know very little about the JDM scene. So I set the challenge. I only set it last night because we were thinking about what we could do on this podcast.
Yep.
So we've set a challenge. We have to find a cool JDM car. And we got a budget of up to £20,000.
Yep.
A budget of up to £50,000. And then a budget of up to £100,000. How did you get on?
Well, this morning, whilst I was on the toilet, and you know I'm not even joking.
I know you're
not
joking.
To be fair, Ped did send this over yesterday.
Yeah, I did mine last night.
Yeah, Ped sent it over yesterday, late afternoon, about 5 o'clock. I was doing things with Lou, we were out having dinner, etc. So I knew I couldn't look until this morning before coming down here, and I had about half an hour. And so that's hard. That's challenging if it was cars I knew about. So I can't believe you're starting with me, but I guess you're going to smash.
I could start first, but
I'll start with the 20 grand.
The 20 grand one.
The 20 grand one. So 20 grand one is actually a car that I have always admired and always appreciated and respected, and is very closely related to a model that we do get, or we have got in the UK over the years. And it is, and I know you could get some right-hand drive examples back in the day, but this is an import. And it's a Honda Integra. Type R.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So this one is bang on the nose. Well, £5 under 20 grand, 88,000 miles. It's a 2000. Hard to believe that's nearly 25 years old.
Wow. Bulletproof engine.
This one's white with black cross seats. I like the white with the red.
I'm pretty sure you could only get those in black or white.
Okay. Yeah, black or white. But then the interior, you could also get black or red.
Red, yeah.
Yeah, this one's, I guess it's a safe spec, white with
black interior.
Black interior. One UK owner, but it was only imported 2021, so it might have 17,000 Japanese owners. But regardless, I just think that's an iconic looking car.
Oh, mate, I agree.
There was one at the track day yesterday, actually, and that's what got me thinking this morning. I was like, Integra Type R.
I can't believe they're 25 years old.
Exactly.
Because they're really, because I had my S2000 and that was the same engine, right? So that kind of 9,000 RPM red line, bulletproof engine, very cool car.
Very cool. Oh, in fact, I lie. It has got it's got red seats in the front, which is what the new Civic Type R has got that as well. Well, I don't know if the one I had, the press car, had red front seats and black rear seats. So
that's weird.
It is weird, but it's just JDM, mate, with red dials. Anyway, right, so let's...
We go ready for a Ped special.
I think. Oh no!
Hey, I've got.
Yours is going to have a toaster in it or something.
No. So I've got my pick here is a K car.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Right. So there's this whole class of cars in Japan called K cars, and I thought K was literally the letter K, but it's not. It's K-E-I.
Yep.
And they're we just don't get that class of car over here. And the reason I chose this one is that Hendy Performance in Eastleigh, there's a guy that works there, has one of these in yellow.
Right.
And I saw it at a Hendy do last year and just thought, that is the coolest car ever. And it's £15,500. And it's called a Honda S660 or 660. Look at that.
Oh, that really is a cool car.
All right.
I mean, mate, what a good looking car.
Yeah. Wait, let me see if I
But Okay, import only.
Import only.
Mate, why have you not done a video on this?
I'm going to, hopefully.
Oh.
But the cool thing, so
it's
they're
like
not
a baby NSX, like
yeah,
a baby.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So I've got to get the back. The back view is very, very cool. I'll get a picture of that.
That's a sort of thing. Patrick would buy one of them.
I know. Yeah. So specification wise, this one's got 57,000 miles. It's got a 660cc engine, which is where the 660 comes from.
Yep.
Manual transmission, just wicked.
So is that a two-cylinder or three-cylinder, I'm guessing?
I'm guessing so, yes.
So is that, I wonder if that's the same engine that's in the, was it the Cappuccino? Not the Cappuccino.
It could be.
Something or other.
Could be.
Mate, that is awesome.
But just a cool-looking thing.
Very, very cool-looking thing.
So that's that's my first one.
Nice. Right? Yeah.
But I did have...
That's not a PED special. That's actually a really good choice.
It is a good choice, but it was only 15 grand. So I thought, well... 20 grand, there's another car that I would really like, but this one's bound to be an absolute shitbox.
Yep.
And that is, I used to have a Toyota Celica, but I had the 2-litre GT, but I always wanted a Celica GT4.
Oh, yes. Wait, and what's that?
20 grand. So this
is a bit
GT,
of a ratty one?
Well, probably 40,000 miles.
Oh, okay.
They only had 245 horsepower, but I just, the only thing it hasn't got, which I'd really want, is it's not got the big wing on the back.
Yeah.
But I think they're just two extension pieces either side.
Okay.
That's quite cool.
That's a cool car for 20 grand. Yeah. When you look at, I mean, which we're probably going to get onto, some other JDM classics of that era, maybe a bit before, how much they've gone up in money, that's actually...
So one of the things, when you start going on JDM import sites, right, you start seeing some really fucking cool cars.
I just went on to Auto Trader.
Yeah, I know. So... If I could get a deal on this one, this is up for 25 grand. I don't think I can talk them down to 20 grand. You know I had an S2000.
Yep.
Right? This is a supercharged S2000 with 400 horsepower.
Oh, wow. Can you imagine what that would feel
like? Oh, no. They only came with 240 brake from stock.
Wow.
So there we go. So there's my sub 20 grand.
Okay. Nice. I think you should do the next one. I think you should lead from here on.
All right.
I feel like I'm going to struggle a little.
I would say is, if you go on, if you do a search on Google for JDM import companies, there's lots and lots of them.
Okay,
and a lot of them look really dodgy.
Yeah,
really, really bad stock lists.
Yep.
So I did go on a few. So the next one was under £50,000.
Mm-hmm.
I've managed to come in 15 grand under budget. With something that I think is quite cool.
Okay.
For me.
So 35 grand.
£35,000.
Yeah.
It is how many miles?
It's an MG Cyberstar. Well, no,
it has 139,000 kilometres on the clock. What's that? That's quite a lot, isn't
it? How much?
139,000 kilometres.
How old is it? 139's not, that's only 80,000 miles or something.
85,000 miles. 1995.
Oh, it's not many when for the age.
Here we go. Here we go.
1995. 35 grand. Yeah. RX-7.
Yeah.
But it's got like a, special edition.
Look at the back view. Look at that.
It's been to Halfords for sure.
It's properly been to Halfords. It's a Bathurst special.
Wow.
It's called a Mazda RX-7 FD3S Type R Bathurst.
It's actually an edition.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
Well, they must have raced. I'm sure they did. The Japanese did enter Bathurst.
It's got a... It's a rare Type R. Bathurst edition was originally imported. So it's come from a collection. I think it's quite a sought-after car.
Yeah, you're not going to see another one of those on the road, are you?
Not really, no. I mean, it's probably because they've all blown up.
Yeah.
But I've never driven an RX-7. And, you know, the closest is I've got my press car I've got at the moment. I've got an MX
rotary.
An MX-30 with a hybrid rotary engine in it. I thought that was really cool. Look at the fin work on the front of that bad boy.
That's very, very cool. It does. It looks good. Yeah. Nice. I'm liking those two.
Yeah. Come on then. What's your 50 grand?
Well, yeah, I mean, mine's not too different. Surprise, surprise. But it's... It's a Nissan.
Oh.
It's a Nissan Skyline.
Oh, I was about to say one of us had to to get some Skyline action in there.
I mean, it looked like you could get some ratty sort of R33s, and even there was a few R34s for sub-50, but I don't know. But I've always, don't get me wrong, those are like godly cars, but but I've always quite liked the R32 because it's just a bit smaller and a bit less shouty. And to be fair, like I said, I probably spent 5 minutes on the internet looking at ones for 50 grand. And I found
where 50 grand's the only important number. Don't give a stuff about
anything else.
Mileage, history.
No, I did. I wanted to find the cleanest looking one. And this particular one, in fact, that looks like it could be a podium place. Maybe. No, I don't know. But 1992 R32 GTR, it's only done 43,000 miles.
Wow.
Extremely original. And that's what I liked about it. It looks extremely original. There's no like...
Is your problem with the whole JDM thing from my limited research is they're all modified to the hilt.
Yeah. And I think if I was getting...
Look at that rig. Three quarters awesome, isn't it?
I know. And it's just a beautiful car. And I think a bit like that RX-7 or... If for 50 grand, what could you buy new? And we've talked about this loads. You can't buy an M2. You could just about get the new M2 6 months old for 55 maybe. Okay, M2 is a cool car, but you're not going to go around. No one's going to come up to you and go, oh, that's a cool car. Imagine you drove that around. Everyone's going to come up to you and talk to you about that car, whether you're car people or not, because it's just a beautiful, almost timeless piece of car history. I think that's really cool. For 47 grand, yeah. Not too bad at all.
And I think the more time I spent in Japan, especially with Nissan, the more I started to learn about Skylines and they have a real cool thing going on, a real cool vibe.
They do. They really do.
Really nice.
Yeah, I want that one. Look at those seats. There we go.
Okay, so if we up your budget a bit.
Yeah.
To 100 grand.
Mm.
Now, I actually found this on Autotrader, so I don't know whether it's an import necessarily. It's probably a UK car, but it's a JDM-style car.
Oh, okay.
And it's, I've driven a few, and I drove one when I was in Tokyo, and it was just epic. My only worry with them is they're probably a bit numb because they're just so good and so fast.
I think we've chosen the same car.
Are we guessing the same thing?
Go on.
The other problem, I think, with them is... finding one that's not been modified by Litchfield is really, really tricky.
Yeah.
So should we do rock, paper, scissors?
Yes.
GTR.
Oh, you won. Yes, GTR. Sorry. Yeah, I got that completely wrong. Yes, GTR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
there's loads of different
editions. For the one that was nearest 100 grand, which was the best one I could find, which has only got 1,700 miles on the clock.
I blew my budget a little bit. I went to 110. But yeah, because I saw it's a track edition. So I was like, ooh, that means it's maybe faster.
So I drove a GTR Nismo in Tokyo.
Wow. They're big money, aren't they?
Oh, they're like 180 grand or something. It's the car Chris Hoy smashed up at Festival of Speed.
And that's where he labelled the Chris Hoy
corner. Done a Chris Hoy.
Yeah.
And they are mega things. I've always kind of... It's been one of those cars that's been on the verges of me thinking I'd really like one of those, but I've never thought I'd like it enough to then take it to the next step, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 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 same. Yeah.
Because they are ballistically fast. They're like 0 to 60 is like 2.8 seconds or something.
Yep. And lap time-wise, for the weight, they've always been... Because they came out, was it about 2007? Mm-hmm. And they haven't really changed much visually, at least during that time. No. But they still look bang up to... I remember when they came out, it's like, oh my God, that is literally a Gran Turismo concept car brought to life. Yeah. Like, it's so futuristic.
And they are stunning things. And we spent some time in Nissan and talked to some of the guys there. They had one in the Nissan Global HQ, a bit like BMW in Farnborough. They've got like loads of cars out in this big showroom. And they've got the chassis of a GTR... but all cut away. So there's no bodywork on it. They've got the engine with like the side cut off and you can see the open of the gearbox. And it was really, really interesting to see the underpinnings of the car.
Yeah.
And they just, the more time I spent out there, the more I thought, oh God, just really fancy one of those. And I think the earlier ones, the infotainment system and the interior was a bit pants.
Yeah.
But as I said, the Nismo one I drove was a proper bit of kit. Unfortunately, a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can pick them up for... from early 50s.
Yep.
I just think you have to be really careful with them in terms of being tuned. But I was on a drive tour with one a couple of years ago when I first got my Porsche. And that had been tuned till it's, I think it was running like nearly 800 horsepower. It was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
The noise it made was unbelievable.
Yeah. They're cool. Yeah, I'm the same. I've always had that sort of appreciation for them, but never the love.
Yeah.
But then I've never driven one. But then I see also they do attract, they're almost like,
say no more. I know.
Yeah,
exactly
they've attracted some,
say.
I don't know, some of the clubs that I've seen and the people. And it's just like, I know it's very stereotypical, but you just see them and like, oh, I don't know if I could own one just for that fact. But then I own two BMWs, so some could say the same about that. So
at least you use the indicators on your BMW. So that's
the what?
The indicators.
Is that
the thing that tells people which way you're going
to go? Oh, of course. I use them all the time.
But I thought I'd leave you with this one.
Okay.
Right. I thought...
Wait, one second, Ped. Can we just... Before you ruin it, you've come up with three really cool suggestions.
Yeah.
That I would probably happily swap with my suggestions, which is the first time it's ever happened. Are you about to completely ruin this?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
So I fell in love with a car in Japan.
You are about to ruin this. I know what it is.
Yes, it's a Nissan Sakura. No, that's not. And I thought, I wonder how much they are for a really nice one. Okay. And I found one at Tom Hartley.
Oh.
which probably starts to make you think,
Yes.
And it is...
What's that going
to
be then?
It is just... Let me get a decent... I'll go to that view, I think.
NSXR? Oh, that's an R34, isn't it?
R34 GTR.
Look at
that. That is just... Yeah. I mean, it's 17,000 miles. The bad news is it's £180,000.
Yeah.
Look at it, though.
Yeah.
There was a few of those in the Nismo factory, and there was one in the Heritage Collection called an R34 Nur edition, which is the Nürburgring. Oh, my God. The colour. It was just dreamy cars.
Yeah.
And I didn't know at the time when I was there. I had no idea how much they were.
Yeah.
Because it's not a type of car that I... and I thought, I know, I'll just have a quick check to see what a nice one is. £180,000.
Wow. But what a... Like, and again, I don't know much about them, but I do know that a bit like the Porsche 959, the technology that was packed into that car, especially when you factor in its age and, you know, its era, it had so many things that modern cars still shout about having today, you know, like, I'm sure it had like torque vectoring and all sorts.
Yeah. Like big, the four-wheel drive system was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a totally original factory spec, original condition car, unmodified. Full service history. Well, that's why it's at Tom Hartley, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't mess around. He only has really nice cars, but it's just like, oh.
Wow. Back there. Wow.
It's a dangerous conversation.
Yeah, I won't be getting one of them in a hurry.
No, me either. Good fun, that, isn't it?
Yeah, lovely.
So did I do well there again?
That was good. And I think the whole, it's funny, when you sent those price points over and I was out with Lou last night, she said to me, she was like, I said, oh, we're doing price point thing again because they get unwell. I hadn't read the JDM bit. And she actually said to me, she was like, why don't you guys start doing price points, but different types of cars or vans or, you know, German or... And it wasn't until this morning I was like, oh, you said JDM. Yeah. So I think, yeah, obviously it's a good idea. And I think, yeah, maybe let us know in the comments what we should talk about next price point wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, what type of vehicle? Because we've both got similar tastes and they're always going to rise to the top. So like, GT3, but it's nice to talk about other things and actually educate ourselves a bit about in the process. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That was a good one. It's nearly an hour, look.
It is nearly an hour, yeah. I've got to rush off now and finish my...
So you got a tough evening, right? You got to finish off filming with an X5M comp.
X5M comp, yep.
And then you got to go to Reading and pick up a Spider RS.
I've got to go to Farnborough first. And then drop that off. Yeah, no, it's going to be... I know, jokey aside.
Can you pick from Porsche? You pick it up from security, right?
Yes. Yeah. So it's going to be a late night. Yeah. Left the house at what, 8 this morning. Won't get home till 9:10 tonight. But
me and Pat will be in the bar having a few beers.
You will, and I'm a bit jealous about that. Maybe I'll come. Maybe. Oh, if Lou's
not
listening,
you were
maybe
invited.
I'll come back via here on the way back. but yeah, no, it's been great, mate. It's been a really, really great day. Fantastic lunch. Thanks again to the fish.
Yeah, mate, it's a what a great venue.
It's
yeah.
been really cool.
There's so many cool spots we could have filmed this podcast here that I'm sure we'll be back again because it is a great venue.
Yeah, in the summer, out on the lawn,
in the hot tub. No one wants to see those.
Yeah, although you could get loads of reels out of that for your Oi. Audience. Yeah, on that bombshell.
Hey, before we go, don't forget, if you're watching on YouTube, hit the subscribe button.
Yep.
You need to give us an audio about, if you're listening on a podcast, give us a rating. But the other thing, head over to Facebook and follow us on our new Facebook page because we put cut down versions, you know, highlights of all the podcasts are going on Facebook. So if you haven't got a whole hour to listen to a whole podcast, you can just listen to like a 3 to 5 minute part of a podcast on Facebook. But we're trying to grow that audience as well. So make sure you do that. Just search Drive Talk Podcast on Facebook.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. Anyway, is now. Oh, no, we don't do that in words.
No, we don't. Don't know what that means. Goodbye.
Bye.